Any views, thoughts, or opinions expressed on the Rejuvenating Health podcast are solely that of the speakers and are intended as such. Please contact your trusted medical practitioner for medical advice. Let's go, girls.
Hey, ladies, welcome back to the Rejuvenating Health podcast. I'm Shauna, and as always, I'm here with women's health nurse practitioner, Lindsay Van Schoik. And today we have a special guest. We have Dr. Julie Fouché on the podcast today, and we're super, super pumped about that. I know Lindsay's fangirling. We've been talking about it. So we're excited to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I love talking, you know, women's health and, you know, all of the things. So
yeah, we were both so excited. And I was like, I'm going to have to keep it cool. Lindsay sent me fangirling. I'm going to have to keep it cool. One of us has to keep it cool. But we're just excited.
So, Julie, like I first heard of Julie through CrossFit, obviously. And then I heard of Wild Health through Julie, and then I went through their fellowship. And so she, like, even you probably don't know this, but you're like a huge inspiration on kind of how I got down my path of doing what we're doing inside Rejuvenating Health.
Cool.
So yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. So why don't you just kind of tell us a little bit about you and how you got to where you are and what that looks like and all that good stuff.
Sure. Well, there's obviously the long version and the short version. So I'll start with the short version, and then we can dive in wherever you would like or wherever you think it would be helpful. But I am a family doctor. I currently work for Wild Health, which is a precision medicine telemedicine company. And we do, you know, we have a little bit of a different approach than the conventional healthcare system. And I, kind of short story on how I got here, I grew up in Michigan. I was always very into sports. I did gymnastics growing up. I ended up going to college at University of Michigan and studying engineering. And during that time is when I found CrossFit. So that was in 2009. It was pretty early. Ended up, you know, really finding it just for my own health and my own well-being, but then ended up pretty quickly finding myself in competitions and at the CrossFit games. And you know, one thing led to another. I competed in the games from 2010 through the season through 2015, through the time when I graduated college and then started medical school. And that it had such a huge impact on me and my life and my direction because it opened my eyes to a lot of the problems with our healthcare system. It helped me to see that, you know, we were not necessarily creating health in the healthcare system, but it was more of an acute care, sick care model. But in the CrossFit affiliates where I was spending a lot of my time, we truly were helping people create health and reversing chronic disease. And so that led me into family medicine. At the time, I also was lucky that when I was at the Cleveland Clinic, the Center for Functional Medicine was started there, which was another different approach to healthcare, looking at root causes. And so I was exposed to that and through residency, really dove into functional medicine and knew pretty quickly that I was not cut out to practice in a conventional setting. I didn't want to be the family doctor that has to see a new patient every 15 minutes and doesn't really have time to get to know you or your story. And so that's ultimately what led me to Wild Health. And I have been working there ever since.
I mean, I think we all have our own stories. That's us that like practice a different way of medicine. But what was your kind of clicking point that made you go that way?
I think there were a few. So the first one I can remember, you know, I went into medical school at the same time I was, you know, competing in CrossFit, learning about CrossFit, but they felt like these two very different parallel tracks. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how they would interact. And in medicine, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought the one thing I could rule out was primary care because I thought it was way too broad, way too general. I always liked the idea of knowing one thing really well. I have call myself a recovering perfectionist. So I think the idea of being a super specialist, knowing one area of the body really well was appealing to me. But one aha moment I had was taking my CrossFit level one, which is the introductory CrossFit seminar where you learn not just the basics of the movements, but the methodology and why we do what we do. And there was this one model that is used to describe fitness and health called the fitness, wellness, sickness continuum. And when I heard that model described, it's basically this idea that we all fall somewhere along the continuum. We can map any of our markers along that continuum, whether it's, you know, our blood work, our blood pressure, our body composition, or our workout times. You know, if you're super fit, you know, the fittest people in the world can run a mile in 3 or 4 minutes. And the, maybe the best mile timers, maybe not the overall fittest. Right. You know, someone who's maybe well might be able to jog a mile, and someone who's sick probably cannot even walk a mile. You can do the same thing for a deadlift. Mm. You can plot any of these along the curve. And this concept that the more markers that we can get on the fit side of the continuum, so if we have a healthy blood pressure and all of our labs are healthy and all of our workout times are optimal, then we have this big buffer against disease. So whenever something happens, which it inevitably will, maybe we get sick, maybe we get the flu, maybe we get in a car accident, then now we have this huge buffer against disease. We have a lot more resilience, a lot more reserve, and we're able to recover and bounce back. And you see that over and over again. We saw that during COVID, right? Right. The people who tended to do the best were the people who already had a good state of health, had many of their markers in the healthy range. You see that when you hear about, you know, terrible car accidents and people recovering from things that, you know, they otherwise wouldn't recover from, but they were so fit that their body had the resilience to do so. And so that was a big light bulb moment for me, because it really made me think differently about health. And then I remember going through medical school and seeing this contrast between spending time in a primary care office, learning the ropes of medicine, and you would see someone, you know, they maybe have high blood pressure, maybe they have prediabetes, you talk to them. I remember getting down and doing burpees with people in the office and being like, look, you can do this. And then of course you don't see them again for 3 months or 6 months. And so not much is going to happen, mm-mm, right? It's just a quick encounter. Mm. And so then usually they come back, their numbers are worse, then they need medication or they need more medication. And on the flip side, I was spending obviously a lot of time in the CrossFit gyms on nights and weekends, and I was seeing people reverse their chronic disease. Mm-hmm. So they were coming off their diabetes medications, off their blood pressure medications. They were becoming generally just happier, having better well-being, losing weight, more confident. And mm-hmm, these were not things I was seeing in the doctor's office. And that was the first time when I realized, okay, you know, the doctor's office is not necessarily the place to create health. Where health is created is in our communities. It's in the places where we spend time regularly, the people we spend time with. And so that made me think differently about health and healthcare, because if we're just constantly putting band-aids on the problems and we're never addressing, you know, the truly trying to create health, we're really, you know, making it difficult on ourselves. So that was another, I would say, light bulb aha moment where I'm like, okay, I know these two things are related, CrossFit and my career as a doctor. I don't really know how. I eventually got to deciding family medicine was right for me, because I wanted to have long-term relationships with my patients and care very holistically for them. And then when the Center for Functional Medicine opened, that was another aha moment, I would say, because so Dr. Mark Hyman, who was the you know, I guess you would call him the advocate and the one who helped open the center with Toby Cosgrove, who was the CEO at the time. I'd seen an email that just said he was doing a talk, like the Wellness Institute was posting this talk on functional medicine. And I didn't really know who he was. I had heard of functional medicine, the term, before, but I didn't really know what it was. And I just thought, oh, I need to go to this talk. And it was very inconvenient for me. Like, it was at 7 a.m. It was across town. I had to go, like, dress up. Like, it was not something that I necessarily would normally go to, but for some reason I felt like I've got to go. And I find out that it's not just him coming to give a talk about functional medicine. It's him coming to announce that they're opening the Center for Functional Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic. And in doing so, he explained what it was. And it was a similar aha moment to when I had seen the sickness, wellness, fitness continuum at the level one. It was like, oh my gosh, now that I've heard medicine or health explained this way, I can't unsee it. And I can no longer go back and practice the conventional way. And so, you know, those things together, I think, led me, you know, into family medicine and knowing that, I think, seeing the way that our model was broken, I looked at other models. I looked at something called direct primary care, which in some ways is similar to what Wild Health does. And, you know, I started to seek out people who are doing things differently, and think about how I wanted to do them differently. And that's sort of how I ended up on this path.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I have similar kind of way. I mean, I got introduced to just a different thought when I went to my L1 as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in a clinic and seeing patients every 15 minutes and went to my CrossFit level one. And I'm like, oh, this is, you know, and then in the box, like we were getting, like you said, like in our CrossFit gym, we were coaching people on how to eat right and move their body and all that type of stuff. And so, I mean, that's why we opened our second gym in the town where I was practicing, because I couldn't do that for people in my office, but we could do it in a CrossFit gym. And it's super frustrating to me that you can't do it in conventional care, just the way the model is set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we talk about that a lot with our clients, because we hear a lot, and I'm sure you, like at Wild Health, you do too. Like, why doesn't insurance cover this? And like, it's super frustrating for people. But like, I heard this amazing analogy this morning, and it was talking about like how your body is your home, and you have to invest in your house. Like, you have to spend money to make your house a home, and your body is a home too. And like, if you think about that when it comes to insurance, like your homeowner's insurance doesn't cover your house to be nice and for your house to be taken care of and your house to be fed.
Buy nice furniture.
It covers emergencies, right? And I think that people need a mindset shift on that insurance is meant to kind of cover those emergencies, not to make you healthy, that you might have to put a little bit of money in yourself to get yourself healthy, just like you put money in a car to drive yourself to work and put money in your home to have a nice home. But that's a huge roadblock for people.
I love that analogy. I've heard it with a car too. You know, like, you don't pay, you pay for your own oil changes, you pay for your gas, you wash your car, but your insurance is there for the accidents. And I think part of the problem is that the insurance system is trying to claim, you know, everything. And so it makes it more expensive, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're, because they're covering, you know, and a lot of these things are related, right? Like, you know, diabetes medications and hypertension medications, like, some, you know, we might not need those if we were healthier, if we had healthier habits. And so it can be very confusing for people. I found that, you know, it depends. It's a very tricky situation. It's very individual, especially depending on the health conditions you have, the medications you need, the type of care you need. But in general, if you go to a very high deductible plan or even some cost-sharing plans, it works more like that model, because it's less money for the insurance, but it's there for emergencies. And you know, you just know and accept you're not going to use it for the basic maintenance stuff. And that's when like a direct primary care practice tends to work well. And sometimes people will end up saving money overall based on what they were paying for their insurance before.
Yeah.
And it's so important too. I don't think people think about, you know, we said about the home or the vehicle, but our body, like we heard also this morning, is the only thing we have. Like, that's our home, that's our vehicle until we're no longer alive. But I just don't think people all the time think about it that way. We just go about our days and it just is what it is. But if you don't take care of it, then down the road, you're going to pay for it in the long run.
Absolutely. We can take it for granted a lot of times.
Yeah. It takes like it's definitely takes a mindset shift, right? Because I, like, even in my, when I work conventional medicine, I'm trying to talk to people about their diet and nutrition, and it takes a certain patient to want to hear it, where other patients are like, I don't care what you have to say. Like, I don't want to change the way that I'm living right now. So
totally,
like, I'm sure at Wild Health, it's more you get those people that are willing to make change, but they still have those roadblocks. Like, it's still such a mindset piece that goes along with
this. It is. Our habit change and our, the ways that, you know, it's all so much based on the ways we were brought up, the cultures that we live in, the stories and beliefs that we have around the things that we do and that are possible. And so no matter where you are, I think, or who you are, breaking those down is a challenge. And it's often a different way of thinking about things.
Yeah. I know another thing that we really see too, is women maybe not being heard about how they're feeling as they're aging and with their menstrual cycle and stuff like that. So, I mean, I know I'm getting older. I'm 37 now and I'm noticing some things.
So old.
I know.
Please don't say that's old, because
I'm not old.
I was just talking about my wrinkles.
Like, Botox.
I was like, Lindsay, you need to be like certified in injectables, because like, this is like getting crazy over here.
Oh my god.
I'm not old, but I'm also not 20 anymore where I could like go do crazy CrossFit workouts
and
recover. So I think that's like something we should totally dive into next, is just how the female body is different than men and how we should pay attention to what it's telling us as maybe we are getting older and when we're in our menstrual cycle and our, how our hormones affect really everything.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I think this is one of the other biggest things that is missing from women's healthcare is that we really are never taught about the wisdom of our menstrual cycles. It's just something that happens and then you like deal with a period every month or you go on birth control or, you know, a lot of the messages that we hear. And also there's not a lot of discussion or education around how our hormones change throughout the month and how that impacts how we feel and the ways that we are best able to function during those times. And so that's something I'm very excited about, the way that this is being talked about more and women are educating themselves more on their cycles and their hormones and what it all means, because I think it's something every little girl should learn about, like when they get their periods, is this is what it is. And like there's so many signs that you can pay attention to that can tell you when these are off, like there's maybe something going on with your health that needs to be investigated. And if your cycle isn't regular or if you're experiencing a lot of symptoms, like maybe those are signs that something isn't quite in balance. And how can we restore balance instead of just, you know, covering it all up by going on a birth control pill, which is often what happens.
Oh, it drives me crazy. I have a 14-year-old and I have to have this conversation with her a lot because sometimes she'll have periods that she doesn't have a lot of cramps and that she doesn't feel bad. Yeah. And then other times I'm like, okay, what have you been eating? Like, what have you been fueling your body with? Like, if you've been eating junk food and trash, like you're going to have more inflammation. Your period's not going to feel the best. Mm-hmm. But that's hard for a young girl to like wrap her head around. But
totally. But amazing that she's hearing those messages because she will think about, right? Like it's something that now she's cognizant of and she'll think about and make those associations when so many of us, I feel like it oftentimes catches me off guard too. I think there were times in my life where I would, you know, I'd get super emotional and feel really down before my periods, but every month it would catch me off guard. I'd be like, why do I feel this way? And then I'd like get my period a few days later. Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. I think, I'm the only woman in my practice. So I get a lot of the teenage girls. Mm-hmm. And you can just see how we were taught, right? So a lot of the parents are bringing the teenagers in. Like, her period's not regular. She's having painful cramps. I just want to put her on birth control because that's what happened to them whenever they were younger, right? Like, they just got put on birth control to mask these symptoms. And I'm like, oh, there's so much more to it. Like, if we give you birth control, we're just suppressing all those natural. So it's like taking the time to really explain to them what birth control actually does and like what your period's supposed to be like. But we don't, like, people aren't taught that.
Right. And it takes a lot of time, right? And a lot of education. And it's hard to do in 15 minutes and, you know, does not benefit the pharmaceutical companies selling birth control. So it's, the system's not set up for it.
No, it's very sad.
It is. It is. And it, I mean, I also, not to say like birth control certainly has its time and place in the right settings. And there's a lot of good things that have happened because of birth control. But like, you know, I think that we have to acknowledge all sides of it, because I do see a lot of patients who have, you know, have significant negatives that have happened because of birth control. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's crazy too, that like for us to just acknowledge that women are not like men in terms of our hormones and that we have very distinct, different phases of each month, and times where we are really resilient and like may have a lot of energy and feel really great and amazing and like superwoman during the first half of our period. And then the second half where we might need a lot more, you know, it's a better time just to like take care of ourselves and do different types of activities and, you know, need a little bit more self-care. And, you know, the messages that we hear and receive are just like, just push through, just keep going. Like I never, ever, up until my, like just the last couple of years, changed anything when I got my period. I was just like, oh, my period's here. Like, just keep going, just do whatever. And there's so much that you can push through and sort of numb. But there's a lot of wisdom and intelligence there. And that's what makes women so unique and is our superpower in many ways. It's just unfortunate that our culture and like workplace is often not, not leaning into those strengths.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned a lot. Like I listened, I learned a lot about from Dr. Stacey Sims on that stuff. Like, yes. Smart Women Are Not Small Men is so good, yes, when it comes to talking about that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's amazing. There's so many, and there's so, that's the beauty of this time right now is there's so many, I mean, we need a lot more, but there's some really incredible women out there who are advocating and who are putting out research like Dr. Stacy, and who are talking about this and, you know, the wearables, the, mm-hmm, the cycle tracking applications. There's a lot, of tools that are available now, which is awesome.
Yeah. How has your training changed? Like, it's changed a lot. Yeah. So I think when, yeah, women think about needing to be fit, they're like, I do CrossFit. So like, I need to do CrossFit and I need to do what you do or do whatever. But yeah, I think there's a huge misconception about what training should look like too as women and, mm-hmm, what we need to be healthy. And I'm sure, yeah, that you had a hard time transitioning from that volume.
Did. It's interesting. It was an easier time than I thought. So there was a part of me that was, it went in phases. You kind of slowly ease yourself away from it. So I stopped competing in 2015, and the next year I basically decided for myself, like, let me just do one workout a day and see how far I get in the open and regionals. And, you know, no, I have no, not even a slight aspiration of going back to the games, but let me just see what's possible. And so, and I had recovered, I had torn my Achilles, so I had surgery. It took time to recover from that and then getting back, building back some capacity. But I did that and I ended up being able to go back to regionals and actually not doing terribly. I can't remember what place I got, but it was somewhere at least like middle of the pack, I think. And I just had a great time because there was no pressure. There was no pressure of qualifying. It was just, let me have a blast out there. And so it definitely kept me still, I think it gave me some accountability. You know, I knew I was actually, it was a training program that I was designing and programming and running. So it gave me accountability to the other members of my program. And it was really fun. But it was one workout a day. And it was amazing how much fitness you retain when you have such a strong base. And then the following year, I ended up doing the same programming and deciding to go as a team to regionals with some people in my gym. So that was really fun. And then I got to residency and things changed a lot more because there was really no
time,
you know, competition or anything. It was mostly just for my mental health. Yeah. And so I continued, I went to a CrossFit gym, did their programming. I don't know. There was times where I didn't go for several days or weeks. But I tried to just have some level of consistency and that was very healthy for me. And then since then, really the pandemic changed a lot of things for me because there was this period of time where I was working out at home a lot. And ever since then, I've really enjoyed having the option to work out at home. So now, you know, on my ideal week, I go do a class twice a week and then I do yoga once a week. And then the other couple of days I work out at home, and my workouts at home are not nearly as intense. I don't always do all of the programming. So it, you know, it has a lot less intense look to it. And I'm still figuring out, you know, I'm still kind of dialing up and down what training looks like to me. I think for the last couple of years, it has been a lot more for my mental health. And I've been, you know, having a lot more focus on my emotional, spiritual, mental health. And so the intensity of exercise just hasn't been there for me. It's not something that I like have felt like I need to dial up the intensity, yeah, and to balance everything else.
Yeah. But I mean, that's, mm-hmm, that's yeah, something to health that people don't really think about. When they think about health, they don't think, yeah, about their mental, like mental, spiritual.
Totally. We think about like training and intensity as, am I sore today? How hard can I push? But like this psychological intensity is also really important to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's good for women to hear too, coming from someone who was like such an elite athlete, that now like you understand as you age, like what you need to do, or in this season of your life, no matter how old you are, what's best, right, for your body. And you used to go so intense, like, right. It's full circle. Cause I'm thinking, we used to watch her like on the TV and now she's here on our podcast, but you know, you used to be working out so, totally, intensely, but now it's different because for this season of your life, this is what's best. So I just think it's good for the women to hear, because a lot of times when they want to lose weight, they think more is best. Like, well, more exercising and less, mm-hmm, eating. And it never works out that
sometimes
way.
Sometimes that's actually the wrong answer, yes, right? Sometimes that actually makes things worse.
For sure.
And so, Yeah. For me, it hasn't, in the process of doing that, there has to be a lot of letting go of attachment to your performance, which is hard to do when it has been such a focus for such a long time. And so, yeah, I don't really focus on my times or my numbers so much. It's not something that I really spend a lot of time thinking about or caring about, but that can be really hard, at first to make that shift. And really being honest with yourself and tuning into your body about what you need and why you are, pushing so hard. Like there's definitely a time and a place for it, but sometimes I think we end up pushing so hard more out of place of not feeling good enough versus a place of true. Like if we truly were coming from a place of self-love and like tuning into our bodies and what they need, sometimes the answer is actually less intensity or less, more rest, things like that.
Yeah, that's hard though. I struggle with that. Like
it's really hard.
It's hard. Yeah. I think the thing that you said about the seasons is really important for people to understand too, and that you, like even me, like if you're a healthy person, you're figuring out something during those seasons, right? Like even if your training didn't look perfect when you were in residency and like the biggest time of your life, it's not like you just gave up being healthy and sat on the couch and ate what you wanted because you were being healthy.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women struggle with that, and they think that everything has to be perfect and life has to be going exactly the way they want it to, and they have to eat their chicken and broccoli and go to the gym, and that's not what real health yeah. looks like.
Totally. Totally. It's not. And I love the quote from Oprah that she says, you can have it all, just not all at once. Right. And I love that because there's, you know, there's always going to be changing, shifting priorities, and there's no such thing as doing everything perfectly all the time. And if that's what you're shooting for, it's an impossible, you know, it's impossible to achieve. So you're always going to feel like you're failing. You're always going to feel let down.
So if you have a woman – and like they know what I'm going to say, so they probably don't want to hear it from me. But what do you tell a woman who's like embarking on this health journey? Like they come to you as a patient, they're like, I just want to get healthy. Every patient's individualized, I know. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, you're right. I think everybody's individual and the approach is always a little bit different. But I think I always really like to hear people's story and their timeline. So specifically if there are symptoms or things, you know, even weight gain, if there are things that are really bothering them or things that they want to improve on, I like to hear how it all played out. I want to hear about like things back to their family history, their birth history, what it was like growing up, the time through school, different stressors in their lives, different exposures. And oftentimes just laying that all out helps us to identify some of the patterns, some of the causes. Like a lot of times there, especially for things like autoimmune disease, there's a big stressor, life stressor that's going to precede that, that's going to be a trigger for that to take place. And so it's starting to understand those relationships, I think, is really important. And then, you know, there's the foundations of, I think, intention is really important. So I always like to talk to people about, again, this idea of are you trying to make up for something or some feeling of lack? Like, I think for the longest time, I thought that, you know, hearing about, you know, learning about CrossFit, learning about functional medicine, I thought that if we could just dial in nutrition and exercise and sleep and stress, like do your meditation every day, we would all be healthy. And like, this is the secret and the healthcare system hasn't figured it out. And like, this is it. But then the more people that I worked with who had all of those things dialed in, like they were just like the person you talked about, like their chicken and broccoli, their workout every day, like they have all those things dialed in, but they still have symptoms. They still don't feel well, or they just aren't necessarily happy or fulfilled. And I realized that it's actually a much deeper layer when we think about root causes. So much of it does have to do with our emotional health. And so many times when we are trying to be perfect, it's because we are not truly loving ourselves, because we're trying to make up for this feeling of I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. And this chasing of perfection is trying to fill that hole. And so I always like to make sure that we are addressing that part on some level, like the emotional health on some level. But they all work together, right? You can't ignore nutrition. You can't ignore exercise. Like all of those things are important. And so then from there, it's really meeting people where they're at, understanding what their current lifestyle looks like, where are the areas that they want to focus in on next, and what's most important. And with at Wild Health, we're very data driven. So we look at all of your labs, we look at your DNA, any type of wearable data, your workouts, so that we can do things in a way that, you know, we can track to see if we make this change, is it actually moving the needle for you? What's our outcome measure, whether it's a lab or whether it's a symptom, to see if what we're doing is actually moving us in the direction we want to go.
Yeah, I think the mental and emotional piece is so important. So, I mean, I was a patient of Wild Health for a year, and Julie Priest was my health coach, and bless her heart.
Oh, like, she's awesome.
Yeah, but I'm not like a good patient because I needed to work on the emotional mental health stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And I didn't want to go there.
No. At least
but then you're a perfect
it.
Patient. Yeah. You're a great patient.
Yeah. But that was like, I mean, I was struggling some with like some gut health issues and like not getting good deep sleep, and my HRV wasn't where it should be. And like, we were trying to focus on a lot of that stuff. And I don't think until I signed up to do Unlifted and worked with Mark that was like the big game changer. Because I had an eating disorder in college, got hospitalized for it. And I don't think I ever worked through the trauma of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yeah. And so, but people don't. Like, they just forget and underestimate about how that trauma can help. You can have everything dialed in, but if you haven't addressed it, like.
Yes. It is mind-blowing to me when I go through patient stories and we talk about things and I'm like, okay, was there anything else? Anything else? And they're like, oh yeah, there was this one like super traumatic thing that happened. And they're like, but like, you know, that was in the past. It's over. I'm like, oh, well, like, look at the, you know, that happened and then this symptom appeared. Like, there is a correlation. So I think we're really good at numbing, at writing things off, at saying, I'm fine, I'm okay. But these things, they have an impact on us, mostly on a deeper subconscious neurological, you know, hormonal. There's a whole field of study called psychoneuroimmunology, which is how our psychology or the things that are happening in our lives, our thoughts, impact our nervous system, impact our immune system, also impact our hormones. So, you know, our physical health is very much a reflection of our mental, emotional health, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can pinpoint like exactly my eating disorder. Like, I had a traumatic event, my eating disorder started, and then I got colitis. Mm-hmm. And it was an immune system response. Like, I had lymphocytic colitis, and that lasted for a long time. Until it really, I like, got through the emotional trauma of what caused the eating disorder.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Our bodies are very intelligent, and when we don't give them what they need and we don't pay attention, they're going to act up in some way. And for some people, that's autoimmune disease. For some people, it's weight gain. For some people, it's, you know, anxiety. There's so many different ways. Everybody's unique in how it manifests, but they have a way of getting our attention.
But I think that's where I get really frustrated with conventional medicine too, because instead of working through that, like, I got put on steroids and then I got put on like immune suppressors, which are not, that's dangerous drugs, or you constantly just a medication thrown on you. When really, if someone would have worked through that stuff with me and taught me how to eat healthy and, you know, sleep. I mean, luckily I figured that stuff out as an adult, but there was like 12 years in there where
you were struggling.
Or like, I love to run. I ran the Boston Marathon, but it was like, I couldn't get through a run without like pooping in the cornfield, you know, like just crazy stuff. Shauna, I got poison ivy in a cornfield one time from doing that. So.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So wild. But people just don't think of this stuff. So I think it's exciting too, the way that things are going. Like you said, even talking about your periods. When we were younger, like, it's just, okay, you're a certain age, you get your period. Like, you can use a pad or a tampon. Really, that's pretty much all it is. If you have cramps, you can hear some Tylenol. But these days, I feel like the girls that are, you know, the generations under us, they're so lucky because these things are now being brought into light and they'll be able to be educated so much more. And even women our age and older, just all of these things coming to light is just so wonderful because we didn't know about these things before. It wasn't talked about.
You're so right. Yes.
Yeah. I feel like we're in this weird time where like medicine's super exciting because there are some people that are trying to figure it out and lead it in the right direction. But then we're still stuck in this system where it's just not set up for success for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. And I think that eventually things are going to shift. They're going to have to shift because that's the way things happen. I hope that there's not a lot of, I hope there's minimal collateral damage in the process, yeah. But like right now we have a lot of collateral damage. We have a lot of, you know, people who are really sick, who the healthcare system is maybe even making sicker in the ways that it's doing a disservice or making people feel like, you know, this is all there is to do is take this medication when there could be so much more, or in the ways that really healthcare interacts with the rest of our society. Like maybe it's not the healthcare system's responsibility, but we have a food system, we have a culture that is also perpetuating these things.
Yeah. But and then as being on the healthcare side, like there's so much burnout, right? Like you're losing a lot of good physicians because you're stuck in a system where you have 30 patients on your schedule in a day and you don't get to spend time with them. Like there's so many times I've thought about leaving my clinic. So I'm like, this is not how you should practice.
Totally. Yeah, it is. It's I had this woman, Dr. Lisa Miller, on my podcast, and she talked about transactional versus transformational relationships. And healthcare is very transactional. And so it's trying to put humans who went into it because they care and because they want to have transformational relationships with patients into a system that where there's really only the bandwidth for transactional relationships. So it's very unfulfilling for the providers and for the patients. It's doing a disservice to both. And somehow like, you know, there is so much technology, there's so many new things that we can make things more efficient, but ultimately at the end of the day, like we're human beings and we need to have relationships with other human beings that are real and meaningful and transformational and not just, you know, come in and write me a prescription.
Yeah. I mean, you can like do all my charting for me and do everything, but at the end of the day, like I still need time to have a conversation with you and talk to you about what's going on. Yeah, it's sad, but hopefully it's changing. Like there's a lot of people out there pioneering that, and hopefully insurance eventually will start covering like health coaching. I think that would be such a huge step in the right direction. Like I know right now I'm getting ready to take the board certification for health coaching, and that's been like a super fun thing.
That's awesome
to go through as well. And just how
I see that coming soon.
Yeah. I think the next testing is, well, I think the cutoff date to like apply is December, and then the testing's in March or something.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. It's been like a fun, and I've learned so much. Like I thought I was a really good health coach, and then going through the program, I'm like, ooh, it's really hard but it's really hard to switch back and forth between provider and health coach. Right. As like, in school, you're taught to be like the advice monster. Just like do this. Where in health coaching, it's like zip your mouth and listen and let your patients come up with what they feel like they need to be doing. And so it makes I encourage all providers to go through a health coaching program because it makes you such a better listener and not advice
giver. Just a better communicator. Yeah. And people, when anything, like in all of medicine, most of it is behavior change, and behavior change is not going to happen from giving advice, right?
No.
Like there's a time and place when there is a condition that they're for education and for saying, here's the options, here's the risks and benefits. But ultimately, like you need the patient to partner with you in that decision. Like they want your advice because you have some specialized knowledge, but like, even if you tell them to take a medication, if they don't really understand it or it's not their choice, they're probably not going to take the medication, you know?
Yeah. And I think that I see that in my office all the time. Like I can tell you to eat better, but if that's not what you want, you're not going to do it. So it's maybe taking that time to spend, okay, well, what do you want? What is something healthy that you can leave this office feeling like you could do if it doesn't have to be eating chicken and vegetables?
Totally. Yeah. And I think I heard recently this concept of how, you know, I think a lot of medical providers, like we have this almost this need to feel like we're doing something or feel like we're providing an answer, we're helping someone. And so sometimes like our need to feel like we are providing a solution is actually not what's best for the patient. Like sometimes what's best is being like, there is no answer. Or like, what do you think? And instead we're like, oh, well, I don't know. So these things aren't going to work. So like, let's at least write this prescription. So I feel like I've done something and I feel like I've helped you. And I think that's also just part of the culture and training of medicine that can be problematic at times.
Yeah. But on the flip side too, it's hard because if you don't, sometimes you have those patients where if they don't leave the office with something, then you're getting,
there's an expectation. Yeah.
So there's that. And then you're getting your score. Like everything's based on scores and how well you did on your, like, so it's like, you know, like you get paid by RVUs and then you get paid by how well your patient satisfaction scores are. And it's like, sometimes you can't be real and truthful and help your patients because you're worried about patient satisfaction scores. It's just not set up.
Yeah. The incentives are not aligned. That's for sure.
Yeah. Because if, like I've had patients where I've like talked to them about their fitness and nutrition and they took it in a way that maybe they thought I was calling them fat when it wasn't that, you know what I mean?
But
all. But, and then so then you get a complaint that you're fat shaming or something. It's like, I was not doing that at all. I was just trying to like have a conversation with you about your health.
Right. It's a double-edged sword. Yeah.
Well, this was really great. So we always wrap up our podcasts with two questions. So I'll do mine's like serious and Shauna's is funny.
Mine is like, I love that. Good team.
Mine is just, if you have one piece of advice for our listeners, just knowing that they're like a lot of women based, trying to improve their health, what would that one piece of advice be?
Oh,
it's tough.
I would say put your own oxygen mask on first. Take care of yourself.
I think that
women in general are always taking care of everybody else and often feel a lot of guilt for taking care of themselves, whether it's taking the time to take a bath or go get a massage or like do anything for yourselves. It is so important. I think just doing that, giving each other permission to do that is so important and so healing.
Yeah, I love that.
For sure. Okay. Julie, if you could be one Disney princess, which Disney princess would you be?
My favorite Disney princess was Ariel, because growing up, Little Mermaid was my very favorite. I watched it over and over and over again. However, I'm not sure, like the idea of living in the ocean is not very appealing to me. Like if I get scared of the ocean. So, you know, I don't know. I think flying on a magic carpet sounds like a lot more fun. So I might pick Jasmine for this particular question.
Yeah. She was my girl too. She's pretty. I like her.
Yeah.
Well, this, And Aladdin was cute. I mean, come on, you can't get it wrong. He's cute. Well, this was awesome. And we will link, you know, all of your social medias, all of your things down below so that everybody can check you out. And we really appreciate this. And thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I loved our conversation and I love what you both are doing. So thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Catch you next time, ladies. See ya.